Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible.
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Nintendo!
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, a new challenger approaches.
Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of October 22nd, 2015. I am your host, Jose Otero, and this is IGN's Nintendo Show. Joining me once again is Per Schneider.
Hey, Jose.
There's Brian Altano.
Rap, rap.
And we have some news to talk about before we bring in a special guest on the show. So, first of all, last week, we didn't talk about that the Wall Street Journal, sources told the Wall Street Journal, that Nintendo began distributing software dev kits for its NX video game platform. This is a big deal because this is one of the few times we're hearing something like this pretty early. I feel like when Wii U happened, we didn't quite get a window of when the dev kits went out. And for folks kind of panicking to that news, it doesn't mean they just went out. It means they have gone out to more people.
Yeah.
As that circle expands, people are going to be talking about it. Now, Nintendo has promised details for this new system or this new platform next year. They don't want to talk about anything this year. But in the article, Wall Street Journal points out, people familiar with the development plan said Nintendo would likely include both a console and at least one mobile unit that could either be used in conjunction with the console or taken on the road for separate use. Now, please bear in mind, this means the development platform will take two systems into account. It doesn't mean they necessarily come together.
Yes.
It's an important detail.
I'm glad you specified that, by the way, because I think a lot of people looked at that as like, oh, it's a portable GameCube that fits and folds in half or whatever.
Yes.
It's not like that. Not necessarily.
So what does this mean, this news? Dev kits are out. What does it say?
Well, there are a couple of things, right? I mean, it could mean that a release date of 2016 is becoming a reality, right? If you look back at Wii U news, for example, Wii U dev kits were shipped in, you know, I think early 2011, you know, more than a year before the system's release, but really kind of the chatter and the leaks and the talk about, hey, we're developing for this machine and this is what the power is like, that was happening about, you know, a year and a couple of months before release of the system.
Right.
It could still be a little bit early if the talks are starting now. But, you know, looking at the Wall Street Journal article, and this came out of the Japan Bureau, right? The writer, the editor was from Japan.
Yep, that's right.
I have a feeling, I'm just guessing, but, you know, given the writer's other articles, I got to think it's a source at Square Enix. You know, one of the Japanese studios out
there.
Look
at you, pointing fingers.
No, I mean, that's just what it sounds like, and it makes sense because they were the earliest folks to say we're gonna have Dragon Quest on the NX, right? They talk a little bit too much out there.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling it's from them.
Interesting. Okay.
But I mean, when dev kits are out more than a year in advance of a system's release. You know, if it's actual dev kits and not just kind of like aim at this kind of goal hardware, that means we're a year, maybe a little bit more away.
But I think people interpret development kits as like the game development on whatever is for whatever this game will be for NX starts now. And that's not necessarily the case in game development. Like they could be working towards a spec they already knew about.
Yeah.
And then the dev kit is the final sort of piece of the puzzle for them to put together a game.
Yeah.
I saw some reactions on Twitter from people saying that, well, this means the games are starting now and they're going to be crap. And it's like, well, first of all launches have questionable software. Like, let's not even pretend that's not a thing.
Yeah.
A and B, that doesn't mean some conversations didn't start before this. That doesn't mean some of these parties didn't know certain specs beforehand. Like, I'm pretty sure I would be willing to bet the Dragon Quest guys knew a little something more or in the Nintendo circle of trust if that is the case.
And there's an important piece of distinction. First of all, Dragon Quest, right, was in development or targeted as a Wii U release, and you're having something where the game design's been worked on for ages, right? But, you know, the graphics and the kind of the final upgrades are still in flux. So that makes sense. It's not a game that's being developed now in the next year.
Sure.
But there are the other titles, right, that are in development for the Xbox One and the PS4 or the PC that can now easily be adapted for this platform now that developers are getting more information about the power of the hardware.
Let's back up a little bit. Let's take Dragon Quest X as the example here, since we're talking about it a little bit. That is two different games. Right now, or sorry, Dragon, is it 10? No, it's the next Dragon Quest. Yeah, sorry, yeah. We keep saying 10. The next Dragon Quest will be two different games. Like, on portable, it's going to be this in tandem 3D, 2D style game that you're going to choose and sort of take different avenues in the story. And then on PlayStation 4, it's something completely, to some degree, I mean, very different.
Yeah.
So which one is it?
Well, that's the question, right? Given that Nintendo has said or hinted at NX being kind of like this connectivity platform, I gotta think it's the one that connects all the platforms, which is more likely to tie in with the mobile world, right?
Mm.
I mean, that's just a guess. But I mean, the other difference now to the Wii U that I see is that the Wii U was targeted to be, you know, PS3, Xbox 360 level at a time when the next generation was already being talked about. And so, you know, I think it's a little different here because we are thinking that the NX is a step up from the hardware power of the Xbox One and the PS4.
And I guess that's the piece I left out, that they're industry-leading chips in this.
Whatever that means. I mean, again, it's like it's the scuttlebutt stuff where, you know, everything is so general, it could mean a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people forget, too, that there were chips on PC better than PS4 and Xbox One the day those consoles launched. Mm-hmm. So this doesn't necessarily mean, like, the next gen is beginning with Nintendo or this will be twice the power of PS4. But if it's, you know, comparable or as good as a gaming PC this year or last year or the year before, that's still way better than anything they've ever given us.
So yeah. It is. Remember, that was the big question. Wii was a huge success for Nintendo. It just fell off when people stopped making games and people, the expanded right. market stopped playing them as well, right? Mm-hmm. But Wii was a huge success, and that was old hardware. It was old and cheap to release mm-hmm. and cheap to sell, and you know, consumers, more people could afford
just
it.
Just a really smart concept.
And yeah. so there was the question, will this be a cheaper Android-based console, like an Ouya micro console type? Maybe not quite as yep. as wimpy, but a little bit more oomph, but not quite a PS4 killer or an Xbox One killer. And these reports suggest that, you know, I'm reading into industry-leading chipsets, I'm reading into it, it is a powerful machine.
Yeah.
So a little bit more how the GameCube was positioned versus the PlayStation 2.
Which, yeah.
Well, but if you think about it, they are launching in the middle of a console hardware cycle.
Yep.
I think it would be a huge mistake, given that circumstance, to not have something that is going to compete or at least look slightly better than what's on that market. But being in the middle of that cycle, they're going to look older faster. Like, that's the other thing. I think they're still kind of in a weird spot.
They're always off
whatever
on,
this, yeah.
yeah,
whatever this thing is.
But again, it depends on what it is, right? If you're going by modern console sensibilities, and I agree with you, right? Like, the success of the PS4, especially against the Wii U, shows you that hardware power matters in the
yeah.
console world, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, the Ouya obviously floundered and other machines never came through. But let's look at mobile phones, right? Nobody's saying, well, nobody's going to play games on the iPhone because it's not as powerful
right.
as the PlayStation 4. And that's the big question.
Well, they don't care.
Which is a big surprise to me, because I thought this is going to be the time where Nintendo just doubled down on their, we don't really care about industry-leading graphics.
Mm-hmm.
We don't care. Because it's a little late. And honestly, like, the PS4 is dominating right now. That's the first time in maybe 20 years where the console with the best hardware is selling the best. Because
mm-hmm.
the Wii didn't. The PS2 didn't.
Mm.
The Super Nintendo before it maybe was going up against the TurboGrafx-16 and other things. Even the Jaguar had a better chipset. Like, the N64... In a lot of ways, was better than
the
PS1.
Well, look at the handheld market. I mean, the Game Boy would not die. Like, that thing was around for what felt like forever.
Right. And the PSP couldn't kill it. Game Gear couldn't kill. Like, people don't necessarily look for graphics. Nowadays, they do. The problem about launching a console that's neck and neck with these other consoles in the middle of a console war is that people have already nestled into their homes, right? On their platforms. You have your people you play Destiny with, right?
Mm-hmm.
In one of two places.
That's right.
I'm going to have my people I'm going to play Battlefront with and stuff like that. You know where you're playing Mario Kart.
I can't believe that's a sentence just because I know how you play multiplayer games. But continue.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just like you get used to your ecosystems, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I have a PS4 and an Xbox One and a Wii U. I've always been platform agnostic. I love them all. But when I go home and I want to watch a movie or something like that, I associate that with my PS4.
Yeah,
when there's
too.
A new next-gen game to come out, like, you know, Assassin's, all my multi-platforms, I play on PS4. Exclusives, I'll play on Xbox One and blah, 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 blah.
But that's a shift from the last generation where I assume you were like me, predominantly playing
360.
Online 360.
Yeah, I was playing, well, more like that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so, and then I play, obviously, I always like Sony's first party stuff more than the other guys. But for Nintendo to come in all of a sudden and just sort of be like, well, A, are they going to, do they start with, like, ports? Do you get mm-hmm. a bunch of leftovers? Do you have, like, a Wii U launch situation where it's like, here's Darksiders 2 and, you know, things like that, where you're just like, well, here's Batman, here's Mass Effect. We're like, well, everyone got these games already.
And the upgrade wasn't worth the additional look, right?
Yeah.
You got a game like Black Flag, Assassin's Creed, which is an awesome game. You look at the Wii U version, you're like, yeah, it's better in some ways, but not in all,
not
right?
At all.
And then there were always kind of like the little asterisk caveats, like,
every
you can't talk
game
with people,
that.
Or,
yeah.
you know, it doesn't have DLC. It wasn't a good story.
So, but the issue with Nintendo platforms in the last 15 years has never been their hardware strength. It has been their third-party connections, basically, and their audience. And those two things go hand in hand, because when they're third-party, when they can ink the best third-party deals in the world, but if their audience doesn't turn around and buy those games, and they only predominantly buy first-party games because that's the way that ecosystem works, then those third parties bail out and they go to the other guys where they can make sales. So to me, like, I actually wanted to see them go a little weirder and go a little more like, we're just making, like, you know, we're gonna make really fun games that don't look amazing or anything like that. Yeah. I looked at this gen, I looked at stuff like Mario Kart and Smash Brothers and Yoshi's Woolly World, and I'm like, these are gorgeous games, and they are not on industry leading chipsets or anything like mm-hmm. that. They're very good looking because that's they are where they need to be artistically going with the style that they're yeah. in. But the problem is Nintendo fans. Nintendo yeah. fans need to buy third-party software.
Well, and I think the big lesson for Nintendo was that it isn't even always power. That's right. It is also just the console's sort of
right.
unique quality. And you saw that. And third parties were throwing themselves at opportunities to yeah. make games for Wii before, you know, the mobile market came and changed a lot of the way casual and other people consume games. And I think there that if NX has that at its core, but then also has, you know, the hindsight of, yeah, we can't come out of the gate looking weaker than
right.
the other, mm-hmm. than the competition, especially if we're rebooting this now of all times. Like, we're not waiting until, you know, Xbox 2 and I mean that as a joke, and,
yeah.
and PS5 come along. We're going to do this now, and this has to draw attention. And the one way to do that is to look good.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, you have to, but and also have that unique hardware concept. Yeah.
And remember how fickle developers are, right? Developers
right.
love machines that let them try something new,
yeah.
right? Like, if they are now running into games, especially with the big open world games where they're struggling with frame rate, right? You see that. We see all the early demos before they optimize.
Look at Watch Dogs on Wii U.
Yeah, the moment they get hardware that is more powerful, they'll be excited,
yeah.
right? And they'll want to make a game. And especially if it is easier to take something simple and move it to this hardware
yep.
yeah.
and have it perform well, then you'll see more third-party games.
I want to specify my statement earlier real quick before I get a ton of hate mail. Mm-hmm. The problem with Nintendo fans not buying third-party games is not entirely on Nintendo fans.
Right.
It's the fact that they have to, when they are given the option to buy a third-party game, it's some last-gen leftovers, or it's a bad watered-down port 6 months
later.
Like, it's tough.
It's
tough.
Usually last year's Madden with Mario. And
yeah, and then EA
right?
and Ubisoft yeah. and all these other companies go, well, our games don't sell on Wii U. And it's like, well, you gave us a watered-down version of your game
yeah.
6 months after it came out. So it's tough. It's tough.
But the other elephant in the room, honestly, is how much it costs to make a game now. And I think
yeah.
one day we need to sit down and really talk about that and explain to people that, you know, this market and the reason third parties don't want to take a lot of huge risk
yeah.
is because of how much it costs to get a game out the door.
But,
that's why you try to put it on every platform. When that one platform
yeah.
isn't cooperating and you have to do a ton of work to do
which
it,
is why that,
they don't
that,
want that.
That mobile backdoor thing that Nintendo could be angling with here could be really huge, because I've been arguing this for a little while now, but there was a while there, especially when I first started working at this company 6 years ago, where the middle of the industry was so strong. The THQs and the Midways and all those things were pumping out games left and right. And they were throwing these huge parties and sending, like, they would send, you know, like, oh, you know, Sega sent a 70-foot Subway sandwich in the lunchroom, stuff like that. That's gone now. All those companies kind of fell back or dipped away. But mobile is the new middle.
Yeah.
Mobile is the new middle of the industry. And if Nintendo can figure out how to get people into that, but still have the opportunity
to tap into that
yeah.
energy, get those people making games
for them. But still satiate the yeah. core gamers with, like, next-gen looking games. I think there could be something
there. Well, mobile right now, I mean, at least I feel, and you guys could disagree, feels incredibly unpredictable. Like,
yeah.
Because there is no pre-release hype, because you're not talking about these games for months and months and months. There is no, like, Legend of Zelda level, like, thing that people are like, oh, man, can't wait till that comes out. Feels like every mobile game I hear about just showed up one day.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's weird to think about, like, maybe Nintendo showing off mobile games at E3 that weren't out for 6 months.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's exceptions to what I just said. I'm not going to pretend that there aren't. But for most of the software I see, like, and the ones that people sort of start talking about, I didn't hear about this until you started talking about it. When
right.
did you hear about it?
Right. It's a lot of word of mouth. So I wonder if that has to do with, like, the certification process on iPhone and stuff like that with Apple. Like,
well,
can you commit to a launch date?
Yeah, you can. So
if it's out of your hands?
The big guys will team up with Apple, get something preloaded, and then Apple will work with them on getting the game live at a certain
right.
hour. You saw
and
that
promoted.
With Fallout, right? Yeah. And get locked into App Store promotion, of course, which then spikes it. But that doesn't work for everyone. Like,
right.
it can be very unpredictable how long your game will sit in certification.
Which is fascinating, right? Because when was the last time Nintendo had to wait for somebody else to say that they can go?
Yeah.
You know,
they've
been running their own show for so long.
But there's also, I think that's evolving. I mean, certainly you could hold a game after it's been approved for a while.
Yeah.
But I also think companies love that surprise factor, that when you're seeing something for the first time and you're saying, hey, look how cool this game looks, that everybody can just click a button and download it, right? Yep. That's something that you don't get this rush in the console world. It's always so premeditated. And I think a lot of console makers are looking to figure out a way to make that happen as well. Mm-hmm.
Yep. So NX 2016? Maybe. We'll see.
Maybe.
We'll talk about this.
They're making games for it now. That's the best news.
That's the best news.
If there was a more fleshed out lineup for next year, other than the Zelda game we have not heard a word about in months, I would say it's later. But it just feels like they're running out of games. And at this point, they want to get this machine out before the next generation is already being talked about.
Yep. That's right. All right. Well, and speaking of The Legend of Zelda, we got to talk to producer Eiji Aonuma and also Hiromasa Shikata, the director on Zelda Triforce Heroes. And in talking to Aonuma, we got a new tease, which I guess I should have expected. But it was more in response to what fans thought of Skyward Sword. And the way this came about was sort of talking about how it seems more and more that Aonuma is especially very aware of what fans want, whether it be the Majora's Mask remake that people were begging him for. Like, I mean, like reading feedback online, the team seems to be pretty aware of that stuff. And so we asked, like, you know, what are some examples of you trying to work in, you know, sort of fan feedback into the next game, especially when the next Zelda game could be the weirdest thing. It could be crossbow training. It could be Triforce Heroes. It could be something you would never even have thought of. But his answer at first was vague, and then we asked for a specific example, and he said, well, we actually had some feedback from Skyward Sword where people were saying, this is not exactly the Zelda game I was looking for. I was looking for a bigger open world. That's what he told us. Unfortunately, I can't go into details. The teasing. But I'm hoping to put a surprise or kind of a twist on my view of an open world game. I hope that you'll look forward to it.
Yeah. That's a bold statement, right? Yeah. There are obviously a lot of open world games out there that are doing things really well, you know, from your Grand Theft Autos to obviously Elder Scrolls and Assassin's
Fallout.
Creed. And even like Just Cause now, huge map and really interactive.
Metal Gear.
So for him to say something, Metal Gear, for him to say something like that, I'm curious what that means now. Does that mean like certain elements are procedurally like generated, that maybe the temples move location depending on who's playing
or time of day?
Like,
I mean, we saw time of day like on the gamepad itself also. Like, how's that going, this whole gamepad integration? Because it begs the question, if presumably this ends up on the next system, what does that mean for this open world? Like, if this thing is going to be spread across two different video game platforms, which they haven't said, but I'm just being the guy who's saying it now. Because I don't like the scenario. I feel like you can't Twilight Princess the industry twice. Like,
no.
I feel like you got to pick and choose. But maybe their hand was forced. They don't want to put out a Zelda that at the end of the day might not do as well as they want it to do.
You say they can't Twilight Princess us twice. They've done a lot of things more than twice. You know, down from like having the huge holiday title slip after telling you, oh no, it's coming, and then not really having
that's
a backup.
That's not the same to me. That is not the same thing.
Like, how many times can they launch without a Mario game? Well, many times, right?
Many times.
They never say never. I could absolutely see at this point, despite them saying it's still a Wii U game, I could see it be another bridge game where it's on both devices.
I think what could separate
feels silly.
It
was silly.
What could separate The Legend of Zelda Wii U or whatever we're calling it? You can't even give it that subtext anymore because who knows?
I don't know what to call it anymore.
Yeah, from other open world games are the weird enemy variety, which I mean Skyrim has to an extent, and Far Cry has with actual real animals and stuff like that. But there's some really cool enemies in Zelda world. Yeah,
real animals like the Yeti,
Right, or all the prehistoric things are doing next.
Yeah.
But it's the traversal, the way that you actually get around the world is way different. Your hook shots and your spinning tops and the leaves that float up, that I don't know how that's going to look if they keep doing that with better and better graphics. But I think that opens up the open world element of it, the bombs and all that stuff, like sort of creating elements of areas that you can get to using a lot more verticality.
which
I find very interesting. Rideable animals and stuff like that. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff in Zelda that I think.
I wonder what time of day is going to do to this game. I feel like you think that's a big one. It might be. I mean, look at Majora's Mask and look at what they did with this 3-day cycle. And I'm not saying it's the same thing.
Yeah.
But what I am saying is maybe that inspired this sort of next take on what. Because I feel like open worlds are like these really big playgrounds to run through, but they don't always operate on a schedule. It depends on the game, really. Like, Metal Gear does a great job of playing with the schedule because at night it's way easier to sneak into places than during the day.
Yeah.
But what about the different people you meet, the eccentric quality that Zelda games have in their characters?
Yeah.
Like, how does that work in?
Look, I mean, there are a lot of things that have been done in open world games. I feel like there are still a couple of things out there. Outside of mods, there hasn't been a game where the world gets flooded.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like where the same environment that you moved around in gets later flooded and that changes everything. You know,
right.
We've seen MMOs GTA mods it, like yeah, that, yeah, but there yeah, hasn't been like a disaster game. And obviously that's what happened with Wind Waker, but you got the final aftermath.
Yeah.
And then we have not seen, I think, the past and the future in an open world game the way Link to the Past did it, mm-hmm. with the two time zones where you had to travel mm-hmm. back and forth. And so could that be what he's hinting at, that this is an open world game where time really factors in?
Right.
Because we've seen the time of day stuff now mm-hmm. a lot, right? Mm-hmm.
This is true.
Like you have to, like certain shops are only open during the day and in every RPG. So that stuff is now commonplace. I wouldn't call
and
that
I don't
a,
think he's going to telegraph it.
Twist.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he's going to telegraph it either, but I do think that it's an idea that could get expanded upon.
I think random generation. That, yeah. I mean, we have not...
I think that's too much.
That.
I think that's too you. This is like when we sat here and you're like, Star Fox multiplayer, get ready, and it's like, nope, that's not a thing.
Well, it's not out yet.
Yeah, I don't know about random generation. I think that like
I think that's too much.
They're Zelda games have always sort of been about like their iconic landscapes and their memorable environments, and not just like you and I all have a different memory of what that environment is because it was generated differently. I think one thing that they could really run with is the day-night system in Animal Crossing. How it brings out different creatures that you can collect and hunt and stuff like that. I think that's a really good, like they've dabbled in that. Twilight Princess had that kind of stuff, or sort of just like bug collecting or finding weird things around the land. Skulltulas and stuff like that in Ocarina appear at, I think, differently at night.
But I hear you, and especially that maybe that every single, or not every single, but majority of the things that you find somehow factor into some sort of crafting or customization or something that uniquely tells your story. But again, it's something we've seen in other games, but it would be curious to see it.
We're seeing it right now.
Zelda, like really, like I'm talking about like mainline console like Zelda.
You see it in Triforce Heroes, right? Like imagine if Tektite shells, instead of getting them as random loot drops, were things you got from battles in the field that only were triggered by certain times of night in this certain giant open area.
And you're already collecting things in like A Link Between Worlds.
Yeah.
Sorry, Pierre, go ahead.
There's one more element that could factor into an open world game in a bigger way, and that's the multiplayer community. I'm not saying Zelda will be a multiplayer game like Assassin's Creed Unity where you team up, but more that it's kind of like this Miiverse connectivity where maybe there's a temple and it needs a million players to open it or something, you know, where they use the power of the Wii NX community to open something or change something in the world.
Someone needs to get Onuma to play Destiny. I'll be happy.
They've played around
then
with
he'll
that
never
lot.
Finish his game.
No, I hear your point. Yeah, something that where an event happening, it's kind of like, I mean, this is a terrible example maybe, but with Splatoon, and it's like not enough players are ranked 10, so we're not opening multiplayer. I'm not saying that same example, but I'm saying something that like a community of people doing it affects the outcome in everyone's game. Like,
right.
Yeah, Nobi Boy had something like that. Do you remember that? That was that Keita Takahashi game?
And obviously you've got Peter Molyneux's crazy little shenanigans where, you know, everybody's trying to solve a mystery together. But like that can really bring people together if it feels like you're not just leaving a signpost or a note for someone, although that'd be cool too to be able to put down signs and stuff. You got the bottles in the Wind Waker remake, obviously. But like something like that, maybe in an open world game, we'll see. We're just speculating, but I'm intrigued by that statement.
Same. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we've got a special guest who is going to talk to us about making music, and especially in video games. Let's talk. We'll be back. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Jose Otero here with Kara Schneider, and we are joined by three special guests. The gentleman behind Super Soul Brothers. So to my left is Robbie Benson. He's the band founder and keyboards.
Yes. Hey, how's it going?
To my right is Brian Hsu. He is also a co-founder and guitar.
Hello.
Oh, moving close, Brian. Yeah. Give me the energy. Mike, yeah, hello. You got to talk into that mic. Hi. And lastly, the gentleman with the best last name I have yet to encounter in life, Alex Popoff, tenor sax.
Hello.
What's going on, guys? Thank you for joining us. So we're thrilled to have you on and just talk a little bit about, you know, sort of your experience and, you know, making music. So tell us, first of all, tell the folks about your band, Super Soul Brothers.
Okay, well, first off, not to put you on blast, but it's called Super Soul Bros.
So we'll
clarify that. If you Google Super Soul Brothers, I think it'll still get to us, but usually
I see Mario Bros. I don't call it Mario Bros.
Right,
I apologize.
Exactly. But at least our website, supersoulbros.com, and then all of our social media handles are
Super Soul Bros.
But okay. It kind of started off as a when I was younger. I mean, I've played music most of my life, and my brother dabbled with drums. So mm-hmm. I was playing keyboards, and he'd play drums. And like when I was 12 or whatever, I would play little tunes from video games that I grew up, you know, playing. And then later on, when I was about 16 or 17. We started doing it more. I met a couple buddies. My friend John, he played violin. So we tried doing a couple YouTube videos really early on of like, you know, okay, Zelda theme and all that. But then later on when I was about 18 or 19, we thought maybe we could do this publicly, do like a show at, you know, I mean, we're based in San Jose, and there's the FanimeCon convention or Fanime. Yeah, Fanime. It's always on Memorial Day weekend. So I don't know what the usual turnout is, but it's a pretty big deal in downtown San Jose. And I had met some people at this place called Iguana's, home of the Burritozilla. It was a burrito restaurant downtown San Jose, and it was just walking distance from, you know, the convention center. And I thought, well, there's a lot of people that usually go there, funnel over from the convention center, and they have live music there. Maybe I could throw a band together, and we could play some video game tunes and just get some publicity. And so we did that the first year, and it was really just me and not my brother, because he's not really a musician per se. He's more of a film guy now. But I just called up a bunch of musician buddies, and we kind of got started. It was sort of a hit. And then the next year we did it again, and I had met Brian and a few other guys. We had Lachlan and we had Luke. We had a bunch of different people that I was meeting, and they were really into this project of playing video game music live with a jazz or a funk kind of.
So that was context. There from the beginning, a sort of a jazz funk flow.
That's what I grew up listening to. My dad was a B3 player, a Hammond organ player, so he was always playing like James Brown records or Herbie Hancock records and all this funky stuff. That's what I grew up listening to. So I couldn't really help but play in that kind of a style if I were to play a video game tune. Mm-hmm.
And did you basically pick kind of tunes from games that you loved, or did you at that point say, hey, I got to explore some new stuff beyond what I played in the past?
I just kind of went the simplest route and just went with the tunes that were already scar tissue in my head. Like I grew up with Mario Kart, just the classic Mario Brothers games, some Zelda games, and so most of what the repertoire was starting out was stuff that I had played so much that I couldn't really – it was super easy. It was stupid easy to play it.
Yeah.
And then we would start when more people got involved with the project, and we actually named it Super Soul Bros. We started coming up with music charts and learning more material to add to the repertoire.
Nice. Okay. And what was the response then? Like you said, was sort of big, right? Because I feel like, at least for me, it always does catch my attention when I'm in a public space and I hear something from a video game.
Because you don't expect it.
You
still
don't
feels like
at
it's
all.
A secret to everybody, right? Like it. That the world
very
is not
true.
In yet that these games have fantastic music and great melodies.
Yeah, I was once, this is just a short story, but I was taking, so in San Francisco we have the BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit, and I was headed to the station, and someone was playing accordion dressed up as Mario, and he was playing. Wow. He actually did the hurry up theme and then started playing really fast. And I was walking by and I was like,
did you walk a little faster?
I kind of felt like I should have run for the train. But more importantly, I looked around at all the other people walking by and I wasn't sure if they were clued into it the way I was clued into it. So for me, it's one of those things I'll never forget. And I don't know what happened to him, by the way, because he showed up at the station like twice and then vanished. So if you're out there, man who played Mario and Zelda tunes on accordion, we miss you. Come back. But to me, like, I guess because video games have always been such a big part of growing up, that's why that moment has always stood out to me. And so, like, then you had a lot of people, I guess, excited because it was like, hey, this is music we know, but with sort of a funky sort of different sound.
Right. Yeah, that was sort of, if there is an ulterior motive to this band, it's to, I just want to sort of share the music that I grew up with, this funky jazz stuff that's not quite mainstream. Mm-hmm. It's starting to get a little more publicity with bands like Snarky Puppy and like Robert Glasper Experiment and different bands that are kind of creating this fusion of jazz and other elements, other genres. Yes. But yeah, try to get those genres out there, play the kind of music I like. And video game soundtracks are a great vehicle for that, to get people interested initially and then to check out something that they may not have heard before.
Nice. Right. And is this now for you, is it a night job or is it becoming part of your day job? How does it work?
So, I mean, you guys could answer differently. Yeah. They're like full-time students. But for me, it's ever since the band kind of started in earnest in the last 3 years, pretty much any of my free time I put towards like trying to push the band along, try to get this booked, try to, you know, talk to, you know, get on this podcast here or, you know, just different things. Like, yeah, absolutely. I'd like for it to be a day job, ultimately. I'm trying to transition into that.
How about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff that works. Now that it's getting more publicity and people are starting to catch on, there's a lot more jobs that we can do to help push the band forward. Especially with like merchandise or dealing with contacts, because when we play at these cons, we get approached by a lot of people who work with video game companies or indie developers. People who hear what we're doing, they hear some potential in that, and we get a lot of contact info. And it's like following up with all these people, any possible lead, because we just want to play wherever we can. But what me and Brian do is we do a lot of now the chart writing. Mm-hmm. Before the charts, when I first joined the band,
they were laughable.
Well, there weren't really many charts. We had Robbie kind of typed up these
word documents of the chord changes.
Just the chord changes, and there was no notes. So it was basically, if I wasn't sure about the song or if I hadn't really learned it, I'd go home, listen to the original, and then make sure it was in the right key that we were going to play it in, and then I just memorize it on my saxophone.
It was pretty heavily reliant on people to just kind of learn the song by ear.
Yeah, right.
And that's what we're all kind of fairly experienced with doing, coming from a jazz context.
It's evolved to now we have a three-piece horn section. So besides me, there's a trumpet and trombone. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty with that is with so many people, it's hard to get everyone to think of it the same way or to rely on everyone to learn the music in a timely fashion. So we kind of take it upon ourselves to hear the music, then we write charts on our computers. But it also gives us the freedom to do our own unique arrangements, so we're not just playing the charts, the songs as they are.
Right.
Because, you know, it's like when we do something like our version of Lost Woods, I mean, the real song's it's pretty up there. Like,
yeah.
Da, 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 we do it. Bum, bum, bum,
dun, dun, dun. More like a swung, like a funky kind of hip hop thing.
Okay. And yeah, I was going to ask that. You said, you know, it's easy to play these pieces. They're so recognizable. It's like you mentioned Mario Kart, Mario Brothers. They're up there. I mean, they're upbeat, fast tracks.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Right.
Just, you know, the one you mentioned.
Oh, absolutely.
Accordion guy played. That is a fast piece.
Actually, and it's funny to just hear Alex mention that, you know, playing these cons have gotten them exposure, because that's actually how you guys came on my radar. great artwork. You know, I was at PAX. I always make sure to stop by the Fangamer booth because they're always good friends of ours.
Which, by the way, Alex and I just so happen to be wearing the same exact shirt from Fangamer.
Yeah, from Fangamer. There we go. So you should check that out on the internet. But more importantly, tell them Jose sent you. But more importantly, you know, I was passing by the booth and I was listening to this very funky jazz rendition. I think it was of a Mario Kart song. I was like, man, that sounds great. And this was shortly after we started this podcast up again, and we're following a weekly schedule. And I was like, this would make sense at some point to include this music, especially because music is such a big part of how we do the show. You know, we always kick off the show with a different song. We always end with a different song. We have breaks with songs. And it's not just to tap into the nostalgia of the people listening, but it's also because this music is really good. And I feel like it deserves that time to stand alone and just kind of refresh and kind of hit reset in your mind before we start talking about something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's how I came across an album. And I was like, man, these guys are good. We need to talk. So, Brian, you have been quiet. So I need to ask, when you met Robbie, sort of did you know what you were getting into in terms of, okay, a band that's playing sort of jazz? Funky, you know, covers on video games. Like, what did you think of that idea at the time?
Well, I first met Robbie because I had been living in L.A. Going to music school at a place called Musicians Institute down there, and
over in Hollywood.
And I had a lot of teachers like that were kind of more in the tradition of jazz and fusion, and I was kind of getting to that point of my musical. I was getting more musical awareness and getting more interested in that kind of playing. Because before that, I was more of a metalhead, and I liked a lot of rock music.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of looking to expand my horizons, so to speak. So when I came back, I didn't really know anybody. I was just going to community college looking for people to jam with. And through a mutual friend, I met Robbie. And it just became kind of a weekly jam thing. And we just went to a friend's house and we played, some jazz standards or some funky music together. And me and Robbie really connected through... really liking this band called the Yellow Jackets, and
which is also like they started in San Jose, but now they're world known. They're they've been around for 30 years. They're touring the world like 6 months out of the year, 7 months. They're another jazz fusion band.
Right. The pianist Russell Ferrante teaches down in L.A. and sometimes at Musicians Institute. So that's how we kind of connected, and from then on, Robbie asked me if I was interested in the video game thing. And actually, before I even moved to LA, I had been working on using Pro Tools and Logic, and I had recorded my own version of the Final Fantasy VII boss battle theme. It was like a metal kind of version of that. So I was always interested in covering video game tunes in my own kind of unique way, and using it as a vehicle for me to solo and do fun stuff over. So with something like this, I was immediately interested in it, and we just went over to Robbie's old your old place that
we would just rehearse a couple tunes, and we basically Fandomay was on the horizon right when I met Brian. It was like March, and then we're like, oh, Memorial Day is coming up. Fandomay, let's really hit this hard. Like, you know, we got about 2 or 3 months to like learn a whole lot of really killer repertoire of, you know, video game tunes. We really kind of went into it in earnest with that. Right. And that was within those couple of months, that's when Super Soul Bros really got its name. Like, we named it Super Soul Bros, and it actually became a project.
At first, it was like Super Soul Bros and the Son of Bits.
And the Sons of Bits.
We had a lot of, like, guest musicians from the Bay Area sitting in. We didn't actually know who would come and play, but the people that actually did just come out of passion for playing just ended up being in the band long term for the most part.
So when you played at the convention, was there any particular piece where you got such a big audience reaction that you thought, okay, now we're on to something? Like anything over anything else?
So ironically, we've never actually officially played at the convention.
Okay.
Which, if Fandomay, if you're listening, we would love to, actually. know, the band actually
adjacent.
Started. Yeah, adjacent. We've always done nearby shows at venues. Yeah, so, and now we've been doing shows lately at Cafe Stritch, which is, you know, still in that same area. But I would say unanimously everyone says their favorite song, although it's not Popoff's favorite song, it's Chemical Plant Zone. And I think that arrangement was just sort of immediately, like, it grabs you and it really fits with the just the funky style that we're kind of known for. Mm-hmm. And I think just that tune in particular, we would always play that. We actually did – we would perform all weekend long. We would do like a Thursday night, a Friday night, a Saturday night, and then a Sunday just to get as much exposure as we could. And every day we would play each song at least once. So I think Chemical Plant is just kind of the main one that I think people tend to remember. And but I don't know if there would be one particular song that helped us realize, oh, we should keep doing this. I think we just – kept doing it because we wanted to.
Yeah.
And it's kind of picked up.
So then what are your sort of individual favorites? Like right now, this is the song that has to be on the set list because I will leave the band.
You're going to hear a different one from you.
Yeah. Right. Like what is that song for each of you? Maybe one or two songs even.
Yeah, it's changed quite a bit lately because the band, it started off as like a quartet, like, drums, bass, keys, and guitar. Now I play bass and the keys because I grew up doing that on the Hammond organ. So now we have the current instrumentation is drums, and then me doing bass and keys, and then guitar, and then we have a three-piece horn section. And so with that instrumentation, it's opened up a lot of new kind of arrangements. And so the set list has changed quite a bit in the last year, basically. In fact, we've totally like stop doing some songs just because we have much more interesting arranged tunes.
And when you're saying you're playing bass, are you playing electric bass or are you playing the bass on the organ?
I'm playing a keyboard that has a bass tone. So I'm working with two keyboards. One is for the bass tone and the other's for...
What are you using? So a Hammond organ?
I'm using a Nord Stage 2.
Cool.
And Nord's just killer. I can't really go back. Like any other keyboard, it's hard to not... play on a Nord. But it's got a great Rhodes tone, clavinet, and it's got a great organ tone as well. But usually what I'm doing is playing Rhodes or clavinet, and then I just have a basic, an electric bass, like a string bass tone.
Yeah.
Patch going on. Nice. Favorite tune right now, what would it be? I still enjoy playing Chemical Plant, but we don't always play that one now. So I think the newest one that we usually try to always get in is it's another Sonic tune. It's Aquatic Ruin, which we mash up. Actually, Brian should talk about this one because he arranged that one.
Oh, yeah. So a fun thing that we like to do with tunes is beyond, playing them in the funky jazz manner is we try to trick people into liking our favorite jazz tunes,
so right?
Like
right.
With with the Pokemon battle or the theme, or
Pokemon Red Blue version theme,
the opening theme. Yeah, we mix that with Herbie Hancock's Watermelon Man.
And Headhunters version.
Right.
Yes.
So we do that, and then the kind of the new one is Aquatic Ruins from Sonic 2, I think. Yeah, it's from Sonic 2.
We can't even remember the games.
Yeah. There's so many Sonic tunes. And and I arranged that in a way that I mashed it up with Chick Corea's Spain. So it's like...
Which fits because they're both in a Latin kind of vibe.
Yeah, it's kind of a Latin feel. And the melody just kind of goes into it in a way that's, that makes sense. So and then we also solo over the solo section of Spain. So it's pretty cool. Like, we like to do all these little things.
That's cool.
To trick people.
Is that your favorite then? Would that be your top tune that you guys play? You're biased,
I'd say that's one of our more recent favorites. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody gets a solo on that one, so everybody gets
a... Yeah, it's a good feature. It's usually a closer for a lot of our shows now. Right. Just gets everyone in.
Mr. Popoff.
I think my current favorite right now is Foreside from Earthbound.
Yes.
That's a good one.
I mean, the original song is already, it's got this kind of clave undertones to it. And so we do it in a Latin groove, which we don't really do much Latin stuff, so I really like it. And I don't play the melody, but me and Bill, the trumpet player, we play just these horn backgrounds that are really... They're just fun to play, and
They're really, really well written. Yeah. That's like a tune that we kind of play almost verbatim, but with we kind of change up the form a little bit.
Yeah, Earthbound's a little tricky because the music from that is so unique. It's and very There's some weird stuff in there. It's just like weird sound effects, but very specific parts that is kind of hard for me anyways. Maybe I'm not super imaginative, but I just can't think of a better way to do them sometimes because the original is so good and so well put together. But besides Earthbound or Foreside, my second favorite would probably be Mario Circuit. Just because it's really fun to play on sax, and I get to play fast.
That's a real old one that we haven't played for a while.
You know what? I would say going back to the prior question of like what was a tune that really kind of got people. Chemical Plant was one of those, but I think Mario Circuit was like another tune that really it's got a lot of chops in it. Like just a lot of the melody lead is really difficult to play, and that's why I let Brian do that. but yeah, it's just it's another like really recognizable tune that's just an old favorite. We've played that one since the beginning.
Another new one that I really like is Meta Knight's Revenge, which Alex arranged.
I arranged really that one cool. And I kind of regretted it immediately after because it's so hard for the horns.
It's a fast one.
It's so fast and by the end of it, I think it was either Poorhouse Bistro Show or whatever we did before that. Where it felt like I had a burn, like you know when you eat something really hot and your tongue feels kind of whatever. That's what my tongue felt like afterwards because of just tonguing on the reed so hard and so fast.
So obviously we're hearing a lot about classic game music with all this practicing and school and everything. Do you have any time to keep up with modern video games? Do you still play games or do you only play instruments?
So that's kind of the running joke
so
for me.
Sad. Only no, play no, instruments.
Exactly. That's the running joke for me is that I tell people I haven't played a contemporary video game since Halo 2, basically.
Wow. Like, it's been a while.
I mean, it's been a while, and I have beat that finally.
Okay.
A little while ago. No, I just bought a Wii U actually because we wanted to kind of get. I shouldn't say get on the bandwagon with Twitch, but actually what we really wanted to do was start doing a music, and we are going to start doing a live music stream on Twitch.
Nice.
But also I wanted to just play some games and use that as an excuse to play some new games and you know, also push the Super Soul Bros brand out there.
Yeah, I mean, Nintendo's been doing some really cool stuff with music, you know. I mean, if you go back to, like, you know, Mario Sunshine, even when they started to play with, like, a cappella, like, synth a cappella versions of their songs. Mm-hmm. So they started to add some more stuff. But Splatoon, for example, sounds like nothing else in their entire gaming history. You guys got to check that out.
Yeah, I do need to.
It's completely ridiculous, the music.
We've gotten some requests for that already.
They sing in tongues. Yeah.
Interesting.
They sing in tongues.
Wow. How about you guys? You play anything?
I would say out of the band, I'm probably the most up-to-date.
He is,
I play recent games, and I play video games probably more than I should when I should be doing my homework. But
you can get away with it right now. You're young.
I'm young. And
of course, you're really good because your fingers are fast because of all the valve
work.
Exactly.
He's got the...
I really enjoy it, but I'm also always going back and playing the games that I really liked as a kid, too, because... From a music perspective, too, I feel like the music in those early games was kind of... They kind of fit more what we do, which is why we do a lot more from that. Because some of the newer games, they have... either they're, like, orchestral or they're rock or something not quite as geared to what we do. But there are some games, and it's mostly Nintendo games, that have these soundtracks that are still... unique, and the most recent one I could think of is Mario Kart 8.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's got an amazing soundtrack. They've posted some videos of their in-studio recordings, and I mean, they've got guys on oboes and English horns, but they're doing this funky stuff. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. The opening theme kind of sounds like a late night talk show, you know. Like I'm always expecting Letterman to jump out and race around in the court.
No, I completely agree, and you know, it's taking a lot of classic tunes and updating them, and that's something I really, really liked. I feel like you get sort of bits and pieces of it in big 3D Mario games. Like you'll get like the song that's an occasional throwback Galaxy or something like that. Mm-hmm. But this last Mario Kart was like everything you've heard before, but with a new, like a fresh sound, and so it was really cool.
But there, I mean, I feel like Nintendo is really consistent with their their sound in a way, right? Like you can tell Pikmin sounds completely different from Mario Kart, and even Mario Kart sounds a little different from the Mario Brothers games, right?
Yeah. Right.
And then Splatoon is just cuckoo. Yeah. So.
But yet when the streams do cross, like take again just for a second, the Mario Kart 8 soundtrack. No, Mario Kart 8 specifically, you know, when they put Link in there, the song that they put in for Hyrule Castle Circuit was crazy. It was just all over the place, but really, really good.
Yeah.
So it was something else to experience. So do you guys also do you guys play games together? I'm wondering, or do you just connect over games?
Now we have an excuse to at least with a Twitch stream.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Brian and I had about a week there, like a month or two ago, where we played Terraria for like 8 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
Like, we both got into it, and we just got so hooked, and it was just me and him, and we just played, like, ridiculously long.
Yeah. Dude, we wouldn't even talk to each other.
Yeah,
we'd just be building stuff. Just be like, yeah.
It's got that classic, like, that classic look and sensibility, but then it has all the trappings of, like, modern games with, like, tons of items and things.
Yeah. We'd just be playing, like, we wouldn't be saying anything for some times, and then he would just be like, I'm gonna get some dinner. I'm like, okay, just keep with it, whatever.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep playing. And then he'd go to sleep, and then he'd be like, "Oh, I'll leave the server up so you can play."
Oh, yeah.
I'd play till like 3 or 4.
I guess in the most recent update, they added it's so that it's really easy to host your own server just by having your game up through Steam. So I just leave it on and go.
And then I just build this huge thing, and then the next morning he's like, when did you build that? I did it all last night.
It's actually, that's a great example. I have kids, and my 12-year-old who's learning, he's learning trumpet. He's learning horn now because school switch you, right? He's done trombone before, but he really likes brass instruments. And like, he got inspired by Terraria, by the music. He started playing that at home. And like suddenly what was a chore practicing music to him became fun, right?
Yeah,
and he started playing Minecraft tunes and Skyrim tunes and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Never play Mario Party with Alex.
Oh, he's cheat?
I don't. I'm just.
He does. I'm pretty sure he does.
I'm
cheat.
Super annoying.
Well, annoying. But that's because I'm super lucky, and I recognize that.
It is paranormal
that I will win most likely.
Wow.
He predicts things. Like he just says, "I'm going to roll a 10," and he rolls a 10.
So you're like Neo. Like, you can see through their matrix.
Yeah. Apparently, it's not Mario Party.
How are you not playing Lotto? Like, hang on a minute or something. You know?
Yeah. We should start gift. You should start placing bets. Yeah.
Well, maybe that's the thing. They'll have Mario Party at casinos.
Yeah. If they ever
play for money.
Yeah,
that's what it takes. Okay, so what are some of your favorite video game soundtracks then? Now we're going classics to more recent stuff, if you want to point them out. So we talked about Mario Kart 8. What else is kind of on that list of, let's say you had to recommend 5 soundtracks or 3 soundtracks to a friend and say, these are the ones you should listen to. Oh, what are those?
Shoot. Well, I'm going to cheat and just say Super Smash Brothers Brawl. Okay.
There you go.
Just because it has... Yeah. So many different.
That is cheating.
Right. Yeah.
That is every soundtrack ever made, including Sonic and Street Fighter.
Right. So,
well, that's the
Mega
Wii U
Man.
One, yeah.
Well, I think Sonic 2 has a really classic soundtrack. So does 3. 3, it was rumored that Michael Jackson had actually written or co-wrote some of those tunes.
Interesting.
They didn't credit him, but you can kind of hear the MJ in it. And then I always loved the Final Fantasy soundtracks. Yeah. They're always really good. Final Fantasy Tactics, kind of a really understated game. I love that, the soundtrack in that game a lot. Nice. I don't know. Earthbound is kind of a new one.
Yeah. Earthbound, that's going to really be a common, choice with a lot of us. Earthbound is probably the first one I would choose. I grew up with Earthbound when it first came out. I think I was like 7 years old or 8 years old. That soundtrack, that whole game just stuck with me. It's pretty much it has very much affected my life and like the work that I'm working on now with the documentary and as well as this band. Since we started, there's always been some Earthbound tunes in our repertoire. I would say the original Mario Kart, Super Nintendo Mario Kart, that one again, like Mario Circuit, I always wanted that to be a tune in the repertoire. Is that one?
Yeah, the title screen music on that game, sorry, not to cut you off, has a very Latin vibe.
Yeah.
I loved it.
We got to get that. Well, they actually, they reference that, I think, in the credits of Mario Kart 8.
Yes.
Yeah, they've got that motif in there.
I love that track.
And then the Rainbow Road from that original Mario Kart was great, too. Mm-hmm. We don't play that as often as we probably should. I really like that one. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know. As for a third, I like a lot of Square soundtracks. I've never actually played a Final Fantasy game at all, mm-hmm. Okay. So that maybe will be something I'll visit on a Twitch stream at some point. But
yeah,
like,
yeah,
I did play Secret of Mana, which I enjoy the soundtrack of, and
that's a fantastic soundtrack.
Yeah,
that
it's
is
killer.
One of the greatest.
Yeah, yeah. And that, it's funny because I think my grandfather bought me that game and I didn't touch it for like years, and then like I just whimsically tried it when I was like 14 years old or something. I was like, oh, this is kind of, oh wow. I played through the whole thing, got to hear the whole soundtrack. But if I could cheat and get a fourth one in, Mario RPG has a good soundtrack too.
Yeah, it's also very good.
Both Square. Yeah.
Well, one of my favorite series is Monster Hunter, and I love the soundtrack to those games. They're mostly orchestral. Mm-hmm. So, and then the songs for each monster, you know, they're very unique, and it's just a sound that I really like to hear more in video games. It's orchestral, but it's not, you know, boring.
Yeah.
No, it feels very grand. Like the world feels very big because of that soundtrack.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
One that I'm pretty fond of is the two Zelda games for Game Boy Color, I believe. It was Legend of Zelda, let's see what it is, Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons. They've got this, I don't know, I played those games a lot because there's a period where I got them for my birthday and then I had lost the power connector for my N64. So all I had was my Game Boy and those two games, and I beat them back to back like several times in my childhood, and it's just burned into my mind, and I really liked it. They sound pretty Zelda, but they've got this kind of dark vibe to them. And then another Zelda game, I really like the soundtrack to Wind Waker.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one.
I really enjoyed that, and all the, especially the boss themes in that game were really memorable.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's got a bunch of good tracks, yeah.
Pilot Wing 64, that's another one that I was super into that.
Yeah,
I think we would play that material a lot more often if it was a little more mainstream or recognizable. Mm. Usually what we've been trying to prioritize our sets to be like what's going to catch people's ear that who have never heard of us before. Because a lot of the time we're playing shows and there's like no kind of preemptive context of, hey, this band plays video game music. We're just a band at a venue and we need to like play the Zelda theme just to let people know, hey, we're playing video game music.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. Some of my favorite soundtracks of all time, one is ActRaiser. Has amazing music.
Yeah.
You know, both ActRaiser games, the first one was a really good game, the second one still has good music, but not
quite
as great
a good
of a game.
Yeah.
It just has amazing tunes, but if you played them somewhere, people wouldn't know. They might think, oh, I've heard this before, but they wouldn't know what games they're from.
Right.
But then, you know, I mean, you can't beat Final Fantasy. The 4 through 6 were the glory days of video game music on the Super NES, and then, of course, Castlevania. You know, Castlevania is this treasure trove of melodies that's just crazy.
Yeah. You got any Castlevania covers? If not,
We just recently started getting PAX, because at PAX, you know, it's like you're there for hours on the expo floor, or at least I would be, and I'd be, you know, just busking, like selling CDs, playing for tips, and taking requests, and I would get a lot of like Ace Attorney, Final Fantasy, and you know, like Street Fighter and
Mega Man,
and then we would get a lot of Castlevania.
Nice.
So like I would kind of, you know, slowly but surely acquire some of these tunes and get them into the repertoire.
Well,
yeah, we've got like,
you can thank Smash Brothers, the new one, for including those tunes now.
Forgetting
hardcore Nintendo fans who haven't played those games back then can now hear the music.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So we do like Vampire Hunter or Killer?
Vampire Killer.
Hunter.
One. Yeah.
And then Smiles and Tears? No, Bloody Tears. Tears.
Bloody Tears.
We've got a few of those. Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah, my favorite game, or at least the sort of when the Castlevania music peaked for me, was Well, I guess it kind of peaked twice because it peaked with Dracula's Curse, the third game. And if you ever hear the Famicom version, we talked about it on this show before. So I'm sure people listening are like, oh, that again?
Not again.
It's that good. You deserve to
the
hear
Famicom
that.
The Famicom disc version.
And then the Symphony of the Night, which was also just so incredible in terms of arrangements and things that they did. And then, I don't know, for me, it's always a Zelda. Like, it always comes back to a Zelda somehow. Yeah. I don't even think Metroid soundtracks have kind of stood out or have stood the test of time to me, although the original still does, but there will always be a Zelda game. I'm like, yep, that one. Mm-hmm. You should listen to that.
There's just so many tunes in the Zelda titles. I mean, Wind Waker sounds very different from Link to the Past, too. Yeah. You know, it has that whole kind of pirate theme built in.
Yeah, well, and the themes are incredibly memorable, no matter what character it feels like they're applied to. Like, even the Triforce Heroes has this French flavor that's a little strange, but at the same time, it's still very, very cool and different. That's awesome. Thank you so much for coming in and for talking to us.
Absolutely.
So what are you guys working on next? Where can people find you? They want to get the CD or they want to follow you guys on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Give them everything, the info dump.
Everything? All right. Well, it's pretty easy. We are our handle on every social media you can think of is @SuperSoulBros. We're on Facebook as well. We're on Twitch as well, just /SuperSoulBros. You can just go to SuperSoulBros.com. We actually have a new site that's going to be going live today, actually. We got it done just in time for this podcast.
Very nice.
And you can buy our albums there. We're on Bandcamp as well if you want to do that. Really, I could go off SoundCloud, Twitter, Vine, whatever,
I've been
Instagram.
Posting some more recent concerts we've been doing, some clips of some better takes of some tunes.
Absolutely.
Every show that we... On our SoundCloud. Yeah. And that kind of has a small selection from each CD that we've put out and some new stuff that haven't been released as CDs. So people who have bought the CDs already can go there and check out maybe some of the our new sound, because you know we don't have a lot of recordings with the three-piece horns.
Right, exactly.
I've also seen you guys on YouTube. I don't know if you've mentioned
that. We're
on
YouTube. I should mention. In fact, that's ironically, I think it's got the biggest following is on YouTube. We have more subscribers on there. So we do record every show that we do. So we're going to start putting up like audio and video clips of our various shows. We're going to get in the studio very soon. We're working on the soundtrack for the Earthbound documentary, as well as the soundtrack for another Earthbound film, Earthbound Saga, which will be, I shouldn't say when that's going to be coming out, but just a lot of Earthbound stuff. And then I'd say in the next year, you could be expecting a couple new albums from us.
Nice, nice. And we'd love to have you back to talk about the documentary, which is Earthbound USA, if I'm right.
Earthbound USA.
That you are currently working on. It's a ton to talk about with Earthbound. In fact, Parrot once turned to me at lunch and said, I will never understand why they won't just put out another one.
Right.
Why Nintendo just let this ball drop, because so many people care so much.
Absolutely.
So it'd be great.
That's the story of the documentary.
So it'd be interesting to have that chat.
Earthbound is the Firefly of video games.
TV
land out there.
All right, well, there you go. Well, thank you for listening to the Nintendo Voice Chat. We are a weekly show on IGN, but we're not the only podcast on IGN. In fact, there are a bunch of different shows, regardless of your interest being PlayStation, Xbox, whatever it is. We also have a bunch of features. We got some cool interview quotes coming from Eiji Aonuma and Hiromasa Shikata. So, you know, keep your eyes open for that. We talked about a bunch of things, including, you know, how Triforce Heroes kind of ended up on this totem system with three players, how Nintendo experimented and reached that point. So we've got some cool info coming there. If you like the show, you can let us know a couple ways. First, you can head on over to iTunes and leave us a review, or email us at mvc@ign.com. We actually have a question for the of the week for you, and that is, there's a Yo-Kai Watch demo right now on the eShop. So we want you to write in and let us know, what do you think of Yo-Kai Watch right now? This is your first chance to sort of experiment, try this thing out. Do you care? Do you like it? Write in, mvc@ign.com. We'll read your feedback next week. Give the demo a shot. Let us know what you think. This is being billed as, to some extent, you're tired of hearing it's the next Pokemon. What do you think now that you get a chance to play it? Lastly, you can find everyone in this room on Twitter, and we're going to go around very carefully. So let's start with Brian.
I forgot my Twitter
handle. I think it's your name, Brian Shu.
Okay. Brian Shu. Find me there.
And Shu is spelled?
S-H-E-U.
There we go. All right. And Alex, are you on Twitter? Because right now, Robbie's email says, @?
I am. I don't
I'm actually pretty new to Twitter. I don't quite care how it works.
Some musician types, man. They hang out in smoky bars.
Yeah. I do.
They don't have phones.
I think you could just find me if you looked up Alex Popoff. My Twitter handle is, I think it's Popolophagus.
Popolophagus, yes.
You won't have to say it. Yeah, I don't know why.
Robbie.
And then my it's my nickname, Gwobs. So at Gwobs. G-W-O-B-S.
Okay, and also the band is at
Super Soul Bros.
All right.
Not brothers, but bros.
And I will not make that mistake again.
No worries. And, everyone does. It's all right.
I blame Mario Brothers. and mine is Jose_Otero on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for coming in, guys.
Thank you again for having us.
Yep. And we'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.